So we're going to look at the independent review issues. Before we start, we have been asked to look at one additional issue related to the import of the affirmation of commitments into the bylaws. Let me see. I don't know if Steve DelBianco is on yet. I don't want to raise this issue until he is on, so maybe we'll postpone that. Bernie and Brenda, could you put up the PowerPoint summary sheet that I sent out? I think it's coming. I hope this will help us organize our discussion today. Yes, it's coming. So just to set the stage, I circulated this morning a 23-page document that Bernie put together that really went through the 34 comments that we got that related to the IRP and included both a fairly detailed discussion about what the comments said, but also pasted in the relevant text from the second draft report. And that helped me as I was going through it to really understand what issues were being raised and where the group had positioned itself in the second draft report, what issues we had addressed, and what issues maybe we could address more clearly. This list is nothing more than my quick summary of where I think the major issues lie, and therefore the areas in which we would like to go to Dublin prepared, as we have been requested to do, with a narrative of the issue, the range of views that have been expressed, and the alternatives that are available to address those. So I'm just going to run through these, and I would welcome any additions or deletions that people think, or any comments on grouping. So first of all, we got a number of comments on funding, costs, accessibility, and independence. And although those issues are all somewhat different, I think that they have some major components worth, some shared components worth talking about. So several commenters commented on the question of whether if I can bore the costs for the panel, whether the panelists themselves could really be fully independent. And although, you know, an independent judiciary in any governance system is generally paid for by the government itself, I think it is worthwhile stopping to make sure that we've gotten the independence issues correctly allocated. A number of commenters also talked about the cost that would be imposed by a fully funded IRP on ICANN and whether that made sense and was sustainable. A number of commenters reiterated the importance of accessibility to having the IRP accessible to the community and to the broad range of perspectives, not just commercial interests. The board comments, I think, bore on this by essentially suggesting that to the extent that there was an IRP, or what the board called a MEM, but which for our purposes, I think are essentially the same thing, and I believe that several board members on the last call suggested that the distinction, that the notion of having two panels wasn't necessarily a requirement. So, you know, that's an issue to think about. But the board's suggestion was that I can bear the costs associated with community-supported independent reviews or MEMS, and that the sort of traditional independent reviews that we've seen that at some level involve commercial disputes continue to be borne by the parties to the dispute, which would be ICANN and the complainant, with the panel empowered to allocate costs as it sees fit based on the merits of the case. So that's one issue that I think that's one set of issues that I think that we had quite a lot of comments on, and I think would be worth our preparing some documentation for in advance of Dublin. Another issue that came up was the questions about the scope of the IRP itself. So in our proposal, we suggested that the independent review would be available to reconcile conflicting decisions of expert panels, for example, confusingly similar panels and the like. One group of commenters suggested that this was a good idea, but that we needed to clarify that in the proposal. ICANN, on the other hand, felt like rather than having the independent review panel doing this work, that to the extent there were additional rounds of GTLDs or other policy development issues that called for those expert panels, the policies themselves should determine how conflicting decisions of expert panels would be reconciled. So to me, the fundamental question here is obviously, to the extent possible, policies should address how you resolve conflicting expert opinions and the like. But the question comes down to, do we want to have a backstop in the event that subsequent policies fail to anticipate every nuance and every gap in this decision-making process? Clearly, nobody anticipated that the level of variation and issues with respect to the, or at least I didn't, so I shouldn't speak for anybody else, with respect to the review panels. But so for me, the question on that one is, do we want a reconciliation source of last resort? One commenter suggested that in addition to issues about adherence to ICANN's mission and its bylaws, that the independent panel should be able to make findings in the face of what it called a fundamentally irrational decision. I noted that the board actually suggested that that be applied in the request for reconsideration case, which makes some sense to me. I feel a little bit more mixed on adding a sort of fundamentally irrational sort of prong to what is otherwise a constitutional court, but it is it's a substantive comment that goes to the scope. And then the final comment that we got from a number of other people was whether the IRP could be used to address actions by the single member that were alleged to be inconsistent with ICANN's bylaws and or exceed ICANN's mission. Now, you know, I know we have pushback on the single member, but I do think that the issue of whether the IRP is a place to address community accountability, at least to the extent that that rises to the level of bylaws violations, is something that we would probably want to discover or to talk about. We did have a couple of people persisting in advocating an abuse of discretion standard for review rather than a looking at the facts and applying them rationally based on their own interpretation. I believe that the ICANN board comments supported a de novo review, certainly IRP decisions before, the one IRP decision before ICANN changed the standard in 2013 also supported a de novo review, but there is that one set of comments out there, so that's another issue. There are several questions of standing that came up, and there are several varieties of it. One issue was several governments, Spain and I think Argentina, echoing Spain, talked about the material harm standard and said that that would mean that governments could not participate. I assumed that they were talking about a sort of prospective harm or interlocutory standard, but I have subsequently had an exchange with Rafael from Spain, and he has clarified that, in fact, what he's saying is that because governments it might be hard for governments to say they are materially harmed, that with respect to governments, and it's not clear to me whether he means governments or the GAC, that standard should be relaxed. And it's also not clear to me whether the sort of community IRP addresses that, but there are those issues. There are a couple of comments from the intellectual property constituency that I found that were interesting because there are sort of both sides of the aisle, which is that individual constituencies should be able to bring community IRPs without community support. Also that there should be, or that individual constituencies should be able to bring IRPs without community support, and that there should be protection against community IRPs where a minority does not support it. That's a kind of relates back to what is a community support, and if something is not a community support, what's the material harm standard that needs to be there. Then there was a thread throughout of sort of a permissive approach for filing versus concerns about abuse of the process. Again, the some questions about how we would prevent abuse of the process, and there are some issues there. The board has suggested rolling back to the 2013 standard in the interim, and that's something that I think requires some understanding on our part as to just exactly what they're talking about. And finally, there were a couple of calls for prompt action to establish the CCWG subgroup to work on the details, the operational details. So that's sort of my overview of the sense of the comments of the sort of the biggest issues. And what I'd like to do on this call is, first of all, are there other issues that people think we need to address? And then talk about these a little bit more. Steve?
Hey, thanks, Becky. It's Steve Delbianco. The Los Angeles meeting, we dived into IRP, and you gave a presentation first. And near the end of that discussion that followed, because I realized you were dialed in, you weren't present in Los Angeles, Krista Spain seemed shocked to learn that the community-based IRP, the one that ICANN pays for, that has to be approved by a supermajority of ACs and SOs, he had the feeling that that kind of a community-based IRP had to be tightly restricted in the scope of issues that you could challenge. And when I quickly went back and read our CCWG second draft proposal, I saw no such restrictions on a community-based IRP, other than the fact that it had to be approved by a supermajority of ACs and SOs. So it's my view that I told Chris that I didn't think there was any scope restriction on that IRP. And I know it's not a part of the public comment, but Chris is part of the CCWG and on the board, so it's important for us to address that, to determine whether I was right, and if so, let's make sure Chris understands that and try to understand whether there's something that he thought ought to be restricted. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Can I just ask a little follow-up on that? Because you're right, I was dialed in. And I think it may have been late. But is that the point in which the discussion about whether something was in the global public interest was in or out of the scope of the community IRP?
Becky, this is Steve. My recollection is that Chris thought that the limited scope was such that the community-based IRP could only be there with regard to the five community powers and whether they're being properly exercised.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's chat about that. Because I, like you, I am not aware of any such limitation in our, in our proposal, and if somebody does recall that. But I do want to say that I was alarmed when the discussion went into this sort of global public policy thing and how that was so broad and amorphous that, you know, you could create endless mischief with it. And that is one of the issues that we will be addressing in the context of the mission commitments and core values. So I do just want to say, I think on our last call we did acknowledge that we needed to be clear that the global public interest, you know, that what we were talking about was within ICANN's mission and as determined by the bottom-up stakeholder process, and then there were some views on different sides. But let me go to David.
Hello, Becky. Thank you. It's David McCauley. I, like you and Steve, was not aware of any such restriction to a community IRP. In fact, at paragraph 268.7, it's very short. I can read it, and I don't think it leads to that. It says, The CCWG accountability recommends giving the community the right to have standing with the IRP. In such cases, ICANN will bear the costs associated with the standing panel, although the IRP subgroup may recommend filing or other fees to extent necessary to prevent abuse of the process. I think it's possible that maybe what Chris was thinking of is the MEM and binding arbitration, which will only, according to the board's proposal, which is only to address fundamental bylaws issues. And so there is a restriction in that appellate setting as proposed by the board. So it's possible, I don't know, I haven't discussed this with Chris, but it's possible that he was getting the two mixed up. Thank you.
Thanks. Alan?
Thank you. Just a question for Steve. I don't remember hearing the interaction. Was Chris saying he believed it should be restricted, or he thought that we had specified it was restricted?
Both, Alan.
Well, what he thinks it should be is clearly an opinion, and that we may want to take into consideration. The part that he thought it already was, I guess the question is, can he cite where we said something that made him think that?
So it seems to me that what I'm hearing from the group is that we didn't intend to create any such limitation. To the extent that there are concerns about scope for a community IRP that would extend beyond that, we probably should ask Chris to clarify his concern and then contemplate addressing that in the scope discussion as we prepare for Dublin. But is there anybody on the call who thought that we had intended to preclude the community from bringing an IRP based on a violation of ICANN's mission, based on actions that exceeded ICANN's mission, or a violation of the bylaws? Okay. So I think the yes.
I'm sorry. I am disconnected from the internet. I have a question. Few minutes ago, I'm sorry to disturb you. In the ICANN comments, they are referred to MEM panel. We don't know whether MEM panel is the IRP or is different, because under the description, they said that MEM panel is to review issue brought by MEM group. It does not talk about any individual bringing anything to that panel. So we don't know whether MEM panel is the same as IRP. They are two different, and what is the differences, and who acts on what? I'm sorry, I cannot raise the hand because my connection is not working, unfortunately, at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus. Yes, and that was a subject that we discussed. I was remote in Los Angeles, and I had the following question. Assuming that the MEM panel would be applying the bylaws, the mission statement, commitments, core values, and bylaws as the standard of review, which I think is what we intended, what need would there be to have a separate MEM panel to address community IRPs as opposed to the IRP standing panel that would be addressing exactly those same kinds of issues and aside from the statutory commitments and applying exactly the same kinds of standards? And the response that I got was, it's not necessary, and it's entirely possible that the IRP panel and the MEM panel could be one and the same, assuming that they are applying the same skill set. And I think that goes to the is one living in the world of statutory rights only versus compliance with the bylaws? And that was from Chris, which was sort of, I don't think that he was dug in on that. And Bruce then chimed in that he was beginning to think that it was unnecessary to have a separate panel. So, again, this is a topic for the group to discuss, but my instinct is that we should keep it simple and that we should have one standing panel. And I would be glad to hear, you know, comments from others on that. But I think, Cavus, there was some flexibility in the board comments on that point. And Asha, I see that you've asked Chris about his comments. Are you able to share his response with the group, or would you like to do that in writing? Oh, you're waiting for his response. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other comments on this particular issue, the notion of, the scope of the IRP applicable to the community and whether it includes not only enforcement of the community powers, but also violations of ICANN's governing documents. Sorry, if you're not speaking, please go on mute. We're getting a lot of background noise. And thank you, Asha, for and Gonzalo for chasing it down. Alan?
Yeah, I wanted to comment on your first bullet on scope, the reconciliation, which may, in fact, be the same one as the fundamentally irrational. The first bullet was an ALAC comment, and if you recall, the addition of resolving panel discrepancies or different results was added as a result of the first comment period, where maybe others, but certainly ALAC identified that as an issue, or maybe it wasn't a comment, maybe it was just something I said, and we weren't disputing whether the IRP should do that or not. But if it does do, if we do leave that in, then we need a corresponding set of outcomes that allow the panel to make a decision. Because right now, although we have multiple types of things it's considering, the only outcome is to decide whether ICANN followed its bylaws or not.
Correct. And that's a really...
We just have to match up the inputs with the outputs.
That's a really, really good point. So can we just have a discussion on the merits for a few minutes here about this particular issue? So I definitely take... the point of ALAC that there's a gap that we haven't addressed. To me, it comes down to, we can properly in our policy development try to anticipate the ways in which expert panels may have differing views, and we have a choice as to whether we want to live with whatever those differing views may be in the event that we haven't fully anticipated them, or whether we would like to have a reconciliation panel of last resort. And I think, Alan, you're right. This does closely align with the fundamentally irrational outcome. Maybe not fundamentally irrational decisions, but fundamentally irrational outcome kind of notion. So that's a question for us, is do we think that there is some purpose to be served by having a sort of court of last resort that's always there in case we get the policy, the ways in which these evaluations are made in case we don't get them perfect in every case. And then, of course, we would need to talk about what the what those outcomes would be. David?
Thank you, Becky. With respect to those panel decisions and the chances that they'll be divergent, I believe you said it was the board, and I think it's my recollection, too, that the board recommended that this be taken care of in the future GTLD rounds. That makes some sense to me because one of the things I noticed in this first round, and this is especially going to be true when you have hundreds and hundreds or maybe thousands of applications, is that decisions continue to come out. For instance, string similarity decisions, community standards or community objection decisions, whatever it might be, legal rights. Even though the names are different, the principles keep getting developed by one decision after another over the course of a year or more. And so it seems to me that in the next GTLD policy development, that would be a good time to take care of rationalizing those kinds of differences. That's the way it strikes me. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan?
Thank you. I support what David said, but I still have a problem. If you look at what happened this time, the board basically said there was no provision for questioning the results of a panel or comparing two of them or holding them up to the light and seeing whether they were similar or not. Therefore, there was no resort. There was nothing that the board could do. In a future round, we could build in some sort of sanity check or something, and that's difficult because you may find out that a result that's done today only seems to be fundamentally irrational a year later when another result comes out which is counter to it. And how do you turn back what already happened, you know, in a if it's the GTLD that might already have been delegated? So there are some more crucial things than just the panel decision. Plus, ICANN uses panels a lot in a lot of different things because you don't want to have ICANN making the decisions. So I suspect there is a need for ultimately, if the process we've put in place through new GTLDs or whatever else has invoked the panels, where the result is questionable by someone, what's the resort? You know, and right now we have, label generation rules that panels are creating and going out for comment and stuff like that. But what happens when we identify a problem later on and we haven't covered it in, you know, a panel of last resort for that particular thing? So I think there's some merit in keeping it here. Hopefully, if we do the policy right next time, it won't be as necessary. But nevertheless, I'm not sure we really want to scrap it altogether. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. There are some bylaws tie-ins, of course, in terms of applying, you know, policies in a neutral way. That's my echo for some reason. Is there, Brenda, are you working on that? Okay, thank you. Chris Despain has joined us. Steve Del Bianco, would you like to explain what the issue you raised? Because maybe you won't have that.
Hey, Becky, it's Steve. I conversed with Chris Despain on Skype, and he remembers the conversation, and he can take it from here.
Thank you. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so my official job at the moment is to tell you all that Steve is not completely mad, and we did actually have this conversation. It's entirely possible it's my misunderstanding, and it's also entirely possible that we're actually just saying the same thing with different words. But I had understood, and as I said, I could very well be wrong, I had understood that what, for the sake of this discussion, we'll call the community IRP, was limited to, in the sense of being binding arbitration, was limited to a finding that the bylaws had not been, the process had not been followed. In other words, I had understood that the community IRP wouldn't be making a finding of fact on the interpretation of what something in a bylaw meant, but rather, if the community had followed the process to block, for example, a bylaw, the IRP finding would be, yes, that process was followed. Now, Becky, is that not, is, or Steve, have I, am I completely off piece on that?
So let me just try to articulate that in a slightly different way, because it seems to me that what you are talking about is, using the community IRP to test the community powers. And that applied in a sort of limited way of testing the community's exercise of its community powers and whether the board had properly respected those, as opposed to that and a more general ICANN has violated in acting in a certain way. ICANN has violated its bylaws. Now, let me give you, I have not been able to think of an example of where there might have been sufficient community support to test this, but for example, you can imagine that of the new GTLD implementation decisions that the board made, members, different parts of the community have questioned, in fact, whether ICANN was acting within its mission or whether ICANN's action was consistent with its bylaws. Obviously, we proposed a rather high threshold of consensus. So I can think of, for example, the trademark plus 50 policy, where, and I'm not speaking to, I'm not making any suggestion that there would have been sufficient consensus to test this. But at least I think that there are some people in the community that would argue that that implementation was inconsistent with ICANN's bylaws and that therefore they should at least have the option of trying to rally sufficient community support to test that. And I'm not going any farther than saying, you know, sort of the rallying, you know, whether there would be sufficient community consensus to support an IRP on those grounds. So I think that that was certainly what the CCWG proposal did not intend to limit the scope of the community IRP to issues relating to exercise of the community powers. Having said that, to the extent that you and or the board and or other members of the community think that there is a concern about that, obviously we want to hear them and we want to think about, you know, whether the scope is right. Could you unmute Chris, or have we done something unusual?
You stunned him.
I see he's muted. Brenda, can you unmute him and see if he's still feedback? Okay.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yes.
Sorry, Becky, and I apologize for the feedback. Yes, I understand. And if I could maybe just take a couple of of examples that I think I understand where the confusion is, and it's probably mine. If you imagine for a moment that there are actually two processes, there's the IRP, and then there is what the board has put forth as the MEM, but that doesn't much matter what it's called. It's a specific community process to deal with claimed bylaw breaches, where there is a community threshold to bring such a claim, and that is binding arbitration. That's what I've been talking about. What I think you're talking about is what is actually an IRP. And I would ask you this question: why would you need to have a community IRP for something like the thing you've described? If the decision at the end of the day by the panel is going to be unaffected by the number of people who brought the claim, then surely gathering the community together is of no consequence, because you can simply do it yourself. So a part of the community could get together to do that, and there isn't a need to have a high threshold of community to bring what I would call a pure IRP, rather than something based on a breach of the fundamental or breach of the bylaws. The community IRP that I've just talked about. Is it because if it's done by the community, something else happens? Like, I don't know, ICANN pays for everything, or it's a different panel. I'm not sure I understand the distinction in the areas of dispute that you're referring to, as opposed to the areas of dispute that involve the board refusing to follow the directions of the community under its fundamental bylaws.
So the answer is yes, there is a difference, and it is the fact that ICANN supports it. So, for example, I believe that some I'm like, you guys are going to have to excuse me. I'm just I'm channeling things that I've heard from people, that there were people in the parts of the community who were not registries and registrars, who, for example, thought that the trademark plus 50 provisions violated the bylaws, but because the IRP is cost prohibitive, and perhaps because, I don't know. I guess I think that the material harm probably could be demonstrated. But it would have depended based on a variety of things. It would have depended on having some support for that, and I guess the argument would have been that if there wasn't sufficient support for that within the commercial actors groups to actually challenge that through an IRP. So now, having said that, you're next going to say, well, then if there wasn't sufficient support, there wasn't sufficient support, and I take that as a correct assessment of the facts. Having said that, I think that there are strongly held feelings in some parts of the community that they could rally support for a community-based IRP, and yes, I am talking about an IRP, in the event that you wouldn't have to go out and find a couple of deep pockets to fund it. So I'm speaking out of turn, and I think most of the people who care aren't on this, but Alan, can you bail me out? Oh, yeah. Chris, do you want to say first? Go ahead, Alan.
Okay. I'm not sure I can bail you out.
Just very briefly.
Go ahead, Chris.
Alan, you go.
Okay. I just came up as your
talking. Very quickly. I understand. I'll shut up.
Chris, go ahead. We seem to have a delay in the
All right,
line.
I will actually go ahead then. Very, very briefly, Becky, I do understand. So I understand that we're actually talking about, in effect, three different things in my head, which is the easiest way for me to understand it. and I'm in principle fine with it. But I if you had a perfect IRP where you had, you know, it was at a reasonable cost, and so on and so forth, it probably wouldn't be necessary. But the question I have really that I would like us all to think about is the one of, if we're going to do that, is the one of what is the threshold? Because it's pointless putting it in place if it's impossible to use it ever. And if the threshold is going to be cross SONACs and more than, you know, more than one or more than two, then it's, you know, it probably sounds to me like something which may well be pretty hard to do. But I'll leave it at that. I at least understand it now. Thank you very much for that explanation, but I'm fascinated to hear what Alan has to say.
Thank you. Alan?
Thank you very much. As you were talking, I came up with another example. If you go back a couple of years to the ICANN CERT fiasco, which ended up with the DSSA formed, which is perhaps the first large cross-community working group with support from many of the ACs and SOs, including some that say they wouldn't want to participate in a future thing. That, if ICANN had gone ahead and implemented it, that is, the board had accepted the advice of the CEO, committed money to it, and implemented it, something which could demonstrably be shown to be against ICANN's bylaws, and yet there would be no aggrieved party to take that to an IRP other than the community itself. So that's one example, for whatever it's worth. Thank you.
Betsy?
Yes, Caboose?
I'm sorry, it is about 50 minutes that discussions is going too narrow between three people only. The remaining people, they either do not follow or they are not interested, because we're going too fine to one a particular area, and two people, they're resolving their own problem for years, has not been resolved. I'm sorry, let us have a more productive meeting. I am totally lost. I don't have internet connection, but I listen carefully to this conversation. Three people, they're ping-ponging with each other. I'm very sorry. I apologize to them. They are very knowledgeable, but we don't follow. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I actually think that we have clarified the issue, and that this is an important piece of the question of scope, so that when we get to the point of writing up, you know, both the areas of convergence, the areas of difference, the possible approaches to bridging that, which is our task, this is something that will be part of it. But I appreciate that it is a little bit down in the weeds and difficult to consider. So moving on to the if we could go back and talk about the funding costs, accessibility, and independence prong of this issue. I would like to have some discussion among the group on the we heard not just from the board but from others about the allocation of funding responsibility. So several commenters suggested that it was important to have the panel have the ability to shift fees depending on the merits of the claim and the outcome, so that in some cases ICANN could be required to bear the cost of the arbitrators. In other cases, the complainant would be, depends on the circumstances and the judgment. Sorry, my phone is ringing. I'm trying to turn it off. And then ICANN's comment that and this is a comment that cannot be ascribed just to the board, but to others who were concerned about costs, that ICANN's obligation to bear the cost of arbitration should be limited to those community IRPs or MEMS, however we define them going forward. Do we have some views on that in the group and in particular by those who had concerns about accessibility? David.
Thank you, Becky. David McCauley. Excuse me. Just on the general topic of funding, I actually think that we were going down the right road in the proposals that we made, and that funding generally, you know, if ICANN pays for the standing panel, the parties would pay for their lawyers' fees, and there could be cost shifting if the panel finds that one or the other side was unduly wrong or dilatory or frivolous with respect to an argument or a claim they made or things like that. And I think that the cost shifting could be imposed by simply billing a party if they owe money or preventing them from making a future appeal if they don't pay up or whatever it is. With respect to the issue of independence, I like your comment early on. Courts in countries are paid by their governments. At some point, somebody has to pay, and I think it was the government of India that had a concern in this respect, and I respect their concern. I don't think it's unreasonable at all, but at some point, we simply have to say, you know, somebody has to pay for this. And I would make a note, sort of an analogy, in this whole CCWG process, ICANN is paying for the legal services of the CCWG's lawyers, and I think there's no question about objectivity or independence in that respect. It's achievable. I think it's possible. With respect to accessibility, I've seen the ideas. We've discussed issues of pro bono representation. I honestly don't know the solution here. I hope there is one, but I just don't know right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. So it seems that we may have some convergence with, you know, one comment that I think was one of the more, you know, one of the more sort of fundamental comments that the board had on the IRP relating to funding. And let me hasten to add, this concern was not expressed by the board only. So I think that's a good thing, and that is something that we will want to put into our views here, and talk about it. Another issue that we got a lot of comments on, and this is something that we spent a lot of time talking about in WP2, and then I think as the CCWG altogether. And that was the question about whether somebody bringing an IRP had to have participated in a PDP and expressed their views, as opposed to sitting on the sidelines and just, you know, gaming the situation and then raising an IRP at the end. We heard those comments in the first round, and we spent a lot of time talking about it. And the view of the group was that this was a sort of difficult standard to apply because, on the one hand, people who are aware of and active in ICANN would have very few incentives to sit on their hands during a policy development process in order to try to sabotage the outcome by filing an IRP, on the one hand, and on the other hand, that, you know, people affected by ICANN policy decision-making may well be absolutely unaware of it until it happens. So the discussion that we had really came down solidly on, along the lines of not imposing participation in a relevant PDP before bringing an IRP. But we had many, many, many comments from people who reiterated this again, that there was a potential for gaming. So I wanted to raise that and seek comments from people. David, is your hand new? And if so, please go ahead.
It's a new hand, Becky. Excuse me. I think you have pretty well summarized, very well summarized, the chasm between both sides of this, and I think both sides have reasonable points. If someone's involved in a process, they should not be allowed to lay in the weeds and then make an IRP claim. If someone such as a registrant is not in the ICANN processes, then they should not be barred by this kind of a rule. It seems to me that one way to handle this would be to make this issue an equitable defense or something in these IRP proceedings. But I also would like to leap to the bottom of your agenda or your points of major issues today. When we get to a CCWG subgroup to work on details, I think that group will flesh out and prompt some more direct way to address these kind of things. So I'm looking forward to that subgroup. I hope one is established, and I think that will help us as we grapple with these, because right now we are grappling with two sensible sides to an issue when we have before, and I think that when we start getting down to details, we'll find our way forward on these. Thank you.
Thank you, David. That sort of echoes one of my thoughts on a way forward on this, is that at some level, you know, sitting on your hands, laying in the weeds, and then jumping up to game the situation rises to abuse of the process. And so maybe a better way of thinking about this is in the context of the variety of abuse-limiting requirements that indeed would come out of the smaller working group, which we are strongly being encouraged to move forward with. So then, coming down farther down on my list, I'm sorry that I don't think Chris is with us any longer, and I don't want to put Asha on the spot, but I do think at some point we need to have a more fulsome discussion about the board's proposal that as the details are being worked out, the standard, we would be rolling back to the 2013 standard. And so I guess I just want to put that on the list of assignments to really, we really need to explore what that means, and, you know, and to have an understanding with about the issues and what that means to the board and what we think that means to us. And then finally, Alan, yes.
Yeah, sorry, I thought that was a relatively simple one. I thought that was simply to undo the bylaw change that was done last time, the one that you in particular, among other people, were complaining about.
Well, that makes a certain amount of sense, except for the following thing. First of all, what I think the bylaws meant in 2013, as opposed to what the board or ICANN Legal thought the bylaws meant in 2013, just as evidenced in the debate in the ICM case, suggests that there's a rather large, that there was at least a rather, for our sake, a rather large gap in understanding. So, for example, does that mean a de novo standard of review or not? Does that mean we have the mission commitments and core values in place or not? What there, you know, there are some details along the way that are probably too much in the weeds to flesh out, but there were a lot of arguments about, you know, whether you could have oral arguments. That was something that was again repeated in the DCA case. You know, witnesses, you know, cross examination, all of those.
Becky, can I interrupt?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. My understanding of their words, and I insight knowledge, except that's the way I read them, was a simple commitment to go back to the bylaws as they were in 2012. That doesn't say it implements ATRT1's recommendation in the correct way or something else, but just to undo the perceived harm that was done by the bylaw changes that they did do. That doesn't say it puts it in the IRTP in a perfect place, just that it changes back the bylaws. I thought that was all they were referring to at that point.
Right, and so that may well be the case, Alan. I think it's worth exploring because
sure.
I think we may be able to close some gaps. Greg?
Thanks, Greg Shatton. Sorry, I had another ICANN call overlapping with this one. In any case,
How's your day job?
doing it in between the ICANN calls, as always, especially with the first one starting at 5 a.m., but it left me with plenty of time in the morning. So in any case, on this rollback to the 2013 standard, and I think this is one of the dangers of kind of a closed ecosystem, not that we're not open and transparent and accountable, but a lot of people have been around a long time. Even I've now been around, a fairly long time, but not compared to some others. So even for me, rollback 2013 standard is not particularly enlightening. And I'm sure it's even less enlightening for people who weren't here in 2013, don't have the 2013 standard. It's a useful shorthand among the cognoscenti, but we really just need to know what the 2013 standard was and understand how rolling back to it would work along with our other proposals. The first is just identify what is meant by rolling back to the 2013 standard so that we can at least be operating from a common baseline definition or common baseline of knowledge that I don't think all of us possess.
Thank you. And I think that's one of the things that, we're supposed to be, the output of our work is really a narrative that explains what the issues are, what the range of views are, what the options are, and so that is a perfect example of something that would be a work product coming out of our work. Okay, the final thing that I want to talk about it is the prompt action to establish the CCWG subgroup to work on details. I think that in reviewing our work, and this is probably my fault or I will accept responsibility for it, we were a little bit unclear about whether we meant, an entirely new CCWG, a subgroup, how we would get this next intensive phase of sort of operational work going. I certainly noticed several comments calling for, sort of prompt creation of this group. Sorry, I'm hearing a lot of background noise, so if you're not speaking, could you mute your phone? Thank you. Please mute if you're not speaking. So I'm going to call on when I call for assignments to have some work done, a paper done on that particular issue, to see if we can make some progress. I'm cognizant of the fact that we're losing participants here, so my inclination is to take this major issues page and to send out a call for volunteers, subgroups to work on the documentation, as opposed to sort of thrashing it out here, also because we have only 9 participants and there may be other people who want to participate. Alan is noting that we have a lot of work to do to address all of what we have been discussing, and that is completely accurate. So that's one reason I want to do that. There is one additional issue that is something of a hold over from our discussion last week on the affirmation of commitments and the import of the affirmation of commitments into the bylaws, both in the mission commitment and core values section and elsewhere. Bernie, could you put up page 80 from the second draft report? Brenda will. So Brenda is doing it, I suspect. So, Alan, you're asking if we can really complete this in the next week or so to be ready for a substantive and quick discussion. I think it will be very hard if it is the same handful of us who are doing all of the work, which is one reason I want to circulate more broadly for volunteers. I think that, you know, by the time we get to Dublin, we really need to be in a position to discuss these issues, and obviously we cannot discuss 199 issues in great detail, but hopefully we can identify the real issues and limit them and get some work from there. Okay. We've got the text from the proposed second draft regarding the affirmation of commitments reviews for promoting competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. So on the left-hand column at the top, we have an articulation of what's in the affirmation of commitments. ICANN will ensure that as it expands the top-level domain space, it will adequately address issues of competition, consumer protection, security, stability, resiliency, malicious abuse issues, sovereignty concerns, and rights protections. Now, this is not this appears in the affirmation of commitments, in the affirmation of commitments reviews. As part of our work in preparation for the second draft report, we determined that the proper place for this was in the reviews section of the ICANN bylaws. There are some, and so we removed the pieces of it from the mission commitments and core values section, and as some people pointed out, I did that imperfectly, and I'm going to fix it. One of the issues that has come up and that I think is an there's a lot of strong feelings about this is paragraph 10 on page 80 in there that says subsequent rounds of new GTLDs should not be opened until the recommendations of the previous review required by this section have been implemented. And it has been pointed out by several people following, and I think it was actually pointed out by the board as well, that that is a new provision that is not in the affirmation of commitments itself. So I wanted to raise this and bring this to people's attention because, again, this will be part of the work that we have to do. And, Steve, could you speak to this provision and the new addition, where it came from and what the thinking is behind it?
Hi, thanks, Becky. It's Steve Del Bianco. Work Party 1, while working on the affirmation of commitments reviews and bringing them in, was digesting the comments that arose out of the first round, and I believe that that's where this originated. It gathered full consensus support of Work Party 1 as we were preparing our second draft, and to my read, there was only one public comment that disagreed with this, which was the board. And in the board's comment, they suggested that that could be a barrier to entry for those seeking new GTLDs, that is to say, the deferral of the second round, the next round, until after implementation of the review team recommendations. So they suggested that would be a barrier to entry by new folks who wanted a top-level domain of their own. So far, I still think there's strong consensus in Work Party 1. We covered this morning. And so far, it seems to me that Work Party 1 would stick with this as, you know, as a firm consensus of CCWG. But I realize your dilemma is, you know, here it is as a bylaws requirement that is embedded in an affirmation of commitments review. So as you said earlier, there are several commitments that are in the affirmation of commitments, and there are even commitments that are at the top of each of the four reviews. In addition to the commitment to do a review, there's this notion of it will adequately address issues of competition, consumer protection, et cetera, everything that's in the first paragraph on the page you have displayed in the Adobe. So many of us saw paragraph 10 as simply enforcing what paragraph 1 says was in ICANN's commitment. So I don't think we would view it as a new commitment, but acting on what was already in the affirmation under the first paragraph. I hope that helps, Becky.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from the participants on this issue, Alan?
I guess it's a worthwhile test to put it to say, let's assume ICANN doesn't make the commitment to, that's in 12 and goes ahead and starts a new round. Having recommendations of how it should be fixed, but we haven't fixed them yet.
It's an interesting way of putting it. I mean, does somebody know what the current status is? There a review? Are there ATRT recommendations?
The review is just being charged. Just being chartered now.
It's just started.
They've just 2 days ago put out a call for applications to participate in it. I would expect it's going to be starting January 1st or something like that.
So, do we understand how would this work? Presumably, the review will take some amount of time to get going, make its findings, issue its report, and make its recommendations, and then there will be some period of time that ICANN needs to implement that. What would happen if the policy, you guys should not all burst out laughing when I say that, if new a new PDP for new GTLDs were to issue prior to the time that this review was going through the was making it, you know, was undertaking its review, would this require the PDP to be held up until the review was completed? Go ahead, Steve.
This is Steve DelBianco, and have done lots of work on trying to lay the groundwork for this affirmation of commitments review of the new GTLD expansion and the application and evaluation process. And that review, as Alan said, will probably start by the end of the year. Figure it will take a year, and it will generate recommendations. And the recommendations, to the extent that they affect the application and evaluation process, as you well know, staff implements very quickly changes to the application and evaluation process, as they did in the previous round. But let's suppose that during the review, there are indications for a need for new bottom-up policy development. And, of course, it would be GNSO, because this is all in the GNSO GTLD price. So a new PDP could be spawned by the review we're speaking of beginning in January. And it's also possible that a new review could be spawned by the GTLD subsequent rounds discussions that are going on in GNSO right now. So you're right. There are possibilities that the GNSO could be in the middle of a PDP on a new policy matter that affects the next round. This doesn't speak to that, right? The bylaw changes you have on the screen in front of you don't speak to that. But in general, ICANN would probably follow Alan Greenberg's lead. They would probably not open a new round where there's a pending policy development process that could affect the way that that new round would work, either the eligibility, the application process, the evaluation process, you know, string contention issues and things like that.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. It dawns on me, however, as we're talking about, that this review could have recommendations that not only those that refer to how we do it next time, but could have remedial recommendations that we have to go back and change the rules for the ones that are already in the route and running. And, you know, assuming, of course, that it would be in things that are subject to consensus policy, and it would take a PDP to do that, fixing the problems in the past one may take a long time, and we shouldn't be bound till those are implemented. So at some level, I don't agree with the board's rationale, but this particular wording of Clause 12 is probably too wide. The prescription against new rounds should only be associated with recommendations that are aimed at new rounds.
Okay,
at the very best. Yeah.
Okay, that is helpful. Thank you. Okay, it's 5:20. We actually have 40 more minutes, but as I said, we are losing folks here, and so what I propose to do is to sort of beef up and explain the major issues list, and then issue a call for volunteers to work on those particular issues. On Wednesday, we will talk about the reconsideration issues, which is a very small number, and hopefully we will have some of the documentation or the outlines of the documentation from Friday's call to discuss at that time. So hopefully, Alan's hand up to volunteer. Okay.
Alan's hand is not up to volunteer.
Is Alan's hand up to comment?
Yeah, Alan's hand is to ask a question.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. For the record, I'm already committed to a bunch of things on Work Party 1, and I have a number of other commitments. So I will help people, but I will not volunteer to take the pen on anything. I want to go back to the comment I made of, can we really get this done? The board said, let's roll back the 2013 changes and make a firm commitment to flesh this out real soon.
I'm starting to wonder if that is a sane approach. Now, I'm not saying throw in the towel today, but I think we have to keep it in mind and make sure that we're setting a reasonable target. This is a really important process, and we need to get it right. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I think that's a very important observation. I would just counter it by saying this is actually one of the areas where the community and the board seem to be pretty close together. I think it's important to the process to the extent that we can identify areas of consensus among the community, the CCWG commenters, and the board. It's very important for us to grab those and at least document them because, you know, we focus on a lot of areas where there are differences. I think we actually are pretty close on the IRP. So without underestimating the amount of work in front of us and acknowledging we have to be realistic, I am reluctant to throw in the towel too early on that. David?
Thank you, Becky. Hi, David McCauley. I think my comments along the lines of Alan's just a little different, and that is I think it will take us time to get organized. When I say time, I mean, you know, by Dublin. But my request to you would be, or maybe we should actually discuss this on our CCWG call, but it might be good to have mini design teams or whatever they did in the CWG. And when you come out with the list of major issues, instead of asking for volunteers to work on them, maybe look for teams to work on issue by issue by issue so that no one has to bite off more than they want to. And then I noticed that Brenda or Alice or someone's gotten a room Saturday morning in Dublin. Maybe some of these folks could get together and discuss this to see who takes the pen and to see, you know, let the ideas gel. But on an issue-by-issue basis, it might be a sort of a mini design team approach might be worthwhile, at least considering. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And Alan has clarified in the chat in a way that I think is very helpful in terms of kind of triage, so long as we capture the areas of agreement. So maybe we don't have to turn that into a huge work party undertaking. So I take your point, Alan, and I think it's strongly worthwhile thinking through. Other comments, questions, perspectives? And we still have we do have hard issues, I think very hard issues, left over from the mission commitments and core values, and that really will be, I think, the hardest part of our work going into Dublin. So I will think hard on this suggestion and start a thread on the list to for us to sort of reach a way forward. Greg?
Thanks. I mentioned this just because it's at the top of my mind, and you mentioned missions, commitments, and core values. Some of the discussion on the mailing list about fiduciary duty caused me to delve deeper into fiduciary duty and to try to explain free lawyering kind of way, but not legal advice, of course, caveat. The particular duties of a nonprofit board member that include the special duty of obedience that only nonprofit board members have, and that's obedience to basically the mission, commitment, and core value of the organization as set forth, you know, primarily in the articles and the bylaws. And so in keeping yet another aspect of getting those right and why they're important is that they really inform what the board's fiduciary duty of obedience is linked to.
Thank you. I totally agree, and your work has been very helpful, and I think we're probably going to talk about it tomorrow.
I just wanted to connect those dots because
that's absolutely correct. All right. seeing no more hands, I think that we will adjourn 33 minutes early because we'll make up for it in some other way for sure. Thanks very much, everybody. I really appreciate your hanging in there, and I really appreciate the hard work everybody's doing. These are important issues.